You guys rest yourselves. Welcome to the White House. What do you think? You like our house? It's the state dining room. There's state dining that goes on here, but now it's for you. We're so excited today as we kick off this latest edition of the White House Music Series. In the past 3 years, we have highlighted country. We've done a little Motown, we've done a little classical, we've done jazz, and today we've got the blues. Yes. But in a very good way, we've got the blues. See, the blues are as deeply American and as deeply human as just about any form of music that we've got in this country. This music wraps all of our emotions, whether it's love and loss, joy and sorrow, heartbreak and celebration. It wraps it all into an art form that stirs our souls and it helps us rise above all our struggles. And that's why this music series is so deeply rooted in the American experience. That's why it has traveled from the Deep South into every part of the country and just about every form of music that we hear today. And that's why, as we celebrate African American History Month, I am proud to have all these folks on stage with me. It's a good thing. So let me introduce a couple of them. Bob Santelli, who has just been amazing. Bob helps us with everything we do here in our music series. He's always right there. He's from the Grammy Museum. He is always participating in these clinics. He is just phenomenal, and he knows his stuff. He is here with us, Bob. We've got Keb Moe. We've got Shamika Copeland, and we have Troy Trombone Shorty Andrews with us. And finally, I just want to take a minute to recognize all of you here today, because you all are really the reason that we're here today. And I understand that you're coming from all over the country. We got Mississippi here, we got a little California, a little Tennessee, a little Missouri, right? A few others, did I miss somebody? Washington, D.C.? Well, Washington State. Yeah, Philly, a little Philly here, see? A little everybody just represent. What, Jersey? Hey, a little Jersey? That's good. Illinois! What part of Illinois? St. Louis area. Well, see, you all are from all over the place. And this is a good thing. You are, from what I understand, some of the brightest young musical talent. Is this true? At your schools and in our country, is that true? We've got some of the brightest, some of the star. Yeah, yes. See, yes, I am. What do you play? Clarinet. What else we got? Who else? Saxophone. Some of the best. Was this vocals? Is that what you're saying? Well, we've invited you here at the White House because we want you to know and that you all have a place here. Place here at the White House. Yes, here. This is your spot. We want this house to truly be the people's house. That's something that we say, that people say, this is the people's house. We just happen to occupy upstairs, but this belongs to everybody. And in opening up the doors to this house, we also want to open up a world of possibilities for young people like you. See, since its very beginning, our country has been built by young people like all of you. Maybe folks that maybe didn't start out with much, but they worked hard, they followed their hearts, and they did whatever they could to make this country stronger, and whether that was in government or business, science, or the arts. If you take these folks sitting up here, they represent that. Before he was a three-time Grammy winner, Keb Moe was simply Kevin Moore. Keb Moe was just little Kevin. The kid down the block in South Central LA, little Kevin. And then Troy was a little boy marching through the streets of New Orleans with a trombone twice his size. Yeah, I can see that. No offense. And as a young woman growing up in Harlem, Shamika struggled stage fright. Is that true?
Yes, ma'am.
She's not shy now. And one time she was actually afraid to be up on stage performing at all. You were afraid. You're over that now, right?
Yeah.
All right. But today, a little nervous, a little nervous. Well, you know, we're in the White House, so you got every right to be a little nervous. But today, she, Keb, Troy, they're all up here at the White House, right? I mean, just think of it a little. They were like you all, right? Hey, did you ever think you'd be sitting up here in the White House?
No way.
Invited by the President of the United States himself? See, that is the beauty of America, right? You can go from there to here in a split second. It's a little focus, right? And I should mention that the president didn't start out at the top either. Neither did I, but let's talk about him for a little bit since he's not here. As many people know, he was raised by his grandparents and by his mom, who was a single mom, and she struggled, just like many parents do, to pay the bills. But he had to work hard and get a little focused, and he wasn't focused all the time. It was later in life that he got a little focus, right? So even if you mess up a little bit, you can get right on track. So I say all this is because I want you all to believe that anything is possible for you all. That's one of the reasons we do this music series. That's why it is so important for me to open up these doors, to have you guys come from all over the country, to sit in the same chairs that kings and queens and ambassadors and senators have sat in, right? They sit right in those chairs. And I want you all to hear from people who have struggled, who've worked, who built careers and art forms for themselves, because the point is, you can be here too. This house belongs to you. These opportunities belong to you. You never rule yourself out, right? You never sell yourself short. You stay focused on your craft. And all of you have been given a talent, a blessing. God, I would love it if I could sing or play something, but I can't. It's okay. But you can. So I want you to use this opportunity as you sit here to ask these wonderful men and women some good questions. Find out what they've done to stay on track. Learn about the art form. You know, don't waste this time. Don't be shy, although I don't think there are too many shy people here. But ask some good questions. And remember that, you know, you're grooming to be the next greatest something, right? But it starts with believing that you can be there. And half of it is walking in these doors of the White House and sitting down here and just being here, right? Just get comfortable here, right? Get comfortable with a little greatness. See how it feels. Put it on, wear it a little bit, right? Feels pretty good. But it requires a lot of hard work. That is the constant theme. I think you will hear here, you will hear from the president, you will hear from me, anybody who has experienced any level of success, there's a lot of hard work that comes with it. So don't be afraid of hard work. Don't be afraid to fail a little bit. Don't be afraid to strip, stumble, make a fool out of yourself sometimes. Sometimes that's the best way to get to your goal, all right? So I am thrilled to have you all here. Have fun. And I have to go to some meetings, okay? So with that, I will turn it over to Bob. You all have fun.
Okay. Well, welcome. As the First Lady said, this is an exciting time for me, for my friends up here on stage, and certainly for you. And once again, last night, for those of you who didn't participate, other people in the room, we did a great blues workshop to prepare for today. And again, hats off to all of you who wrote some of the most amazing blues lyrics you have ever heard in your life. They were truly outstanding. So well done again, guys. Really a wonderful job. Let's talk a little bit about the blues, and let's kind of follow up to what we talked about last night. And if you recall, I said that if you had to pick one music form, one American music form above all others, that really was the bedrock and the foundation for American music in the 20th century, it would have to be the blues. Of course, it has to be the blues. So the question is, well, why? The answer is relatively simple. Because if you think about the music forms that follow the blues, like jazz, gospel, rhythm and blues, rock and roll, soul, hip-hop, funk, all of these music forms, all distinctly American music forms, come from the blues. They have their roots in the blues. Now, the blues, of course, is one of the oldest American music forms as well. We don't really know when exactly the music form first surfaced. We don't exactly know where. But we do know it was probably around the 1880s or so when the very first blues songs began to surface. And we do know it was probably around the Mississippi Delta, or actually in the Mississippi Delta, that this occurred. Now, you have to understand, blues was never born. Like, all of a sudden, today is the day of the birth of the blues. It doesn't really happen that way. Music forms evolve. Take sometimes many years to evolve, but eventually they become a form unto themselves. So in the 1890s, early 1900s, right around that time, we start to hear a distinct sound coming out of the American South, coming primarily from African Americans. And the reason why it's coming from African Americans is because this music form is a music form that is built in traditional African American folk forms, something we talked about last night. The work song. The hard work song, the Negro spiritual, black folk songs. These are, if you will, the parents of blues. So these forms help give way to this music that we call the blues. And the thing about the blues that's really interesting is that, unlike a lot of other American music forms, this is one of the most emotionally intense music forms of all of them. We talked last night, when you built your blues songs, we talked about trying to convey a human emotion. Oftentimes, especially in the early days, blues was built around sadness or tragedy or alienation, sometimes depression. But it wasn't always that way. As the music form begins to grow and mature, what we have is a blues sound that becomes happy. It could become sad too, but it certainly could become happy. It could become sarcastic. It could become funny and humorous. So the music form begins to grow. By the 1910, 1920s or so, we have a music form. And there's a guy by the name of W.C. Handy. He's often called the father of the blues. He really wasn't the father. There is no father of the blues. If there is, we don't know who he was. We don't know who the mother of the blues was, but we know that people back then used those terms to become popular and to help sell records. So W.C. Handy was the father of the blues. To this day, he's called that. He was from Memphis. And he's the first one to really recognize the form and make sheet music that actually captured on a page what this music form sounded like. By the early 1920s, this music is now being recorded because we have a fledgling recording industry in this country. And a woman by the name of Gertrude Ma Rainey, the mother of the blues, she is one of the great female singers from this time. We also had the Empress of the Blues. Her name was Bessie Smith. We also had people like Blind Lemon Jefferson. We had people like Charlie Patton. And then in the 1930s, we had Robert Johnson. So many great blues singers begin to make records in the 1920s and 1930s, so that what we have now is a recorded history of this music form. What we don't have, and it's a shame that we don't, because musicologists back then didn't think the music worthy enough of getting oral histories and getting interviews. Can you imagine if we had an interview with Robert Johnson? Oh my goodness, it would be amazing to have him tell his own story. Very often this music was built from West African myths and religious practices. Robert Johnson had a great song, you may know this song, Crossroads. Crossroads Blues was really the name of it. And this particular song was built in West African tradition because Robert Johnson was such an amazing guitar player. Imagine Jimi Hendrix on steroids. I mean, that's what Robert Johnson was like. This guy could play. When the Rolling Stones first heard Robert Johnson on record, Keith Richards, the guitar player of the Rolling Stones, swore there were two people playing, not one. That's what Robert Johnson was all about. And the great story about Robert Johnson is that he started out as a clumsy kid, teenager who couldn't play anything. He goes away for about 8 months to a year or so, and he comes back to the juke joint where he first would hang around and listen to the great bluesmen play in Mississippi. Comes back, he's an astonishing player now. People got suspicious. Where did he get this talent? He didn't have that talent last year. Maybe he sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads, because in West African mythology, going to the crossroads is where you can meet some pretty heavy characters from the underworld in particular. So the word went around that Robert Johnson had sold his soul to the devil, and in return, he got these incredible guitar skills. So he writes a song called Crossroads and actually helps perpetuate that myth, because he actually infers in that song about going to the crossroads and meeting somebody who gives him something special. The blues continues right through the Depression, right into World War II, and then there's a remarkable change, because right up until this point, the blues is primarily acoustic, played in juke joints and social clubs and back porches and house parties all over the American South. White people are listening to it too, but black people are the ones who are really promoting it and making it be what it ultimately comes. And then in the 1940s, things change immensely, because in the 1940s, World War II occurs. During World War II, a lot of people, white young men, are drafted immediately into the service to fight on two fronts, in the Pacific and the Atlantic. White women now have to help carry the load up north, but it's not enough to man the factories and to build the guns and the tanks and the jeeps, etc. So all of a sudden, there's economic opportunity for African Americans from down south, and they move up, called the Great Migration. Blacks move up en masse up to places like Chicago, Gary, Indiana, Pittsburgh, Newark, New Jersey, Cleveland, Ohio, certainly Detroit. And as they come, they bring their culture with them. And as they bring their culture with them, along comes the blues. But when the blues gets to Chicago and all these urban cities, something else has developed in American music history, the electric guitar. And it was very fortunate that the electric guitar was born then for bluesmen, because instead of playing in a country juke joint out in the middle of nowhere in a field, you have a situation where they're playing in clubs now, in south side of Chicago and in Gary, Indiana, where there's a lot of noise. It's the urban city. So they plug in. Instead of playing acoustic guitars, they start playing electric guitars. And one of the ones who really makes that transition from acoustic to electric and from rural to urban is the great Muddy Waters, real name McKinley Morganfield. And he helps set the stage. And now, by the 1950s, we have a new revolution going on, musical revolution in this country called electric blues. You had Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and Sonny Boy Williamson and Little Walter, so many great artists now playing what once was acoustic country blues, primarily from Mississippi. Now it's electric Chicago blues. There are kids on the other side of the Atlantic, people tonight who will be playing here tonight, like Mick Jagger and his guitar player from the Rolling Stones, Keith Richards, the great Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, who is also here to play tonight for the president. They are young kids in England. They're hearing these electric blues records and just being blown away by it. And what they do is they start to imitate. So by the 1960s, they're playing the blues. They're playing the blues and turning on other kids from America, white kids primarily, and we're hearing the blues for the very first time. Kids who lived in Northern California or up in New England or Minnesota, who really didn't have access to blues culture, now they're hearing it, oddly enough, from the Brits, who are exporting it over back over to us and reintroducing to us our own great American blues music. In the 1970s and 1980s, this thing just continues to push so that we have the birth of blues festivals all over the country. And now we recognize, finally, in 2003, Congress, 100 years after W.C. Handy, remember W.C. Handy, father of the blues, first heard the blues in Mississippi, Congress, for the very first time, recognized the blues as a great American music form. In the past, they'd recognize jazz, they'd recognize classical and Hollywood musicals. This was the first time they actually recognized the blues. It was a historic point, 100 years after the fact. And today, of course, what we have blues celebrated by people like the great Buddy Guy, who will be here tonight. Certainly, the ambassador, the heralded one, B.B. King, who will also be here for the concert tonight. And then a whole new generation of artists. Artists like Keb Moe, Shamika Copeland, Trombone Shorty, they carry on this blues tradition, trying to mine from their music the human spirit, the essence of what makes us distinctly American. Because this music form, even though you can hear it all over the world, you can go to Chile and hear blues, you can go to Philippines and hear blues, you can go to China and hear blues, but when you come here and you hear it from the community, from the roots, that's where the authenticity actually lies. So they have a responsibility, if I may so, they have a responsibility to carry on this tradition. It's a lot of weight on their shoulders to do this, to introduce to you guys, as we said last night, so you understand this music as a part of the American spirit, as part of the American character. That's what the blues are. That's what it means to us as Americans. This is our music form, whether you are white or black or Native American, it's all part of the American music spirit. And when you consider, as I close here, when you consider America's great cultural exports, yes, you have to consider our Hollywood films for sure, but right next to that is our great body of music. And when we talk about that great body of music, the appreciation, as I travel the world, people say, oh, I love your blues. I love your blues. And that is a fact. All over the world, but in this country here, it's our job and our responsibility, as I talk to you today, to carry on, for you to take what I'm telling you today and investigate more for yourself. Go back and listen to their recordings. Listen to B.B. King's. Experiment with Muddy Waters Records and Howlin' Wolf. Learn about the genius of the harmonica thanks to Sonny Boy Williamson and Little Walter Jacobs. This is part of who we are. This is part of your experience. This is part of being an American and understanding our music, great music treasury. So with that said, as I bring us all the way up to the present time, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask each one of you just a question or two to kind of get things rolling here, talking about your personal relationship to the blues, and then basically we'll open it up, and I'm sure some of you have some questions. When you do ask a question, would you please, we have a lot of press here, stand up, speak loudly, and make certain that you say your name and where you are from, okay? And then ask your question, and then just one question, right? Okay. Kevin, let's start with you because you're a very traditional, you start out in a country blues vein, that kind of blues that I was talking about that really comes out of Mississippi. Talk about how you first get involved in the blues growing up in Los Angeles.
Well, growing up in Los Angeles, there's a lot of blues there. That migration you talked about, it went up north to Detroit, Chicago, St. Louis, also went west to Los Angeles. Yep. People are talking about maybe not in as great numbers. But so I was around a lot of blues people, but I didn't take it on early. Mm-hmm. I had to be convinced. I was like kind of caught up in the pop world of making hit records, which, you know, so I practiced being a songwriter, being a guitar with no identity. But to make a long story short, when I got in my early 30s, I realized there was something really missing in what I was doing. There was a soul that was missing. There was an authenticity, a kind of like a truth that I didn't have, although I had skills, I could write, I could play. And then I heard Big Bill Brunzy, and I heard Muddy Waters, and I heard these guys, and I said, okay, that's not Hollywood. That's straight out the cotton field. That is real, and that's what's been missing from what I was doing. So I proceeded to study and go back and find out who these people were and learn their songs and play them. And even though I could play, you know, the R&B and the jazz stuff, it was like still, and I didn't throw that away. What I did was, is that blues put something in me that was there already, but it woke up a sense of reality and real truth in my music that otherwise would have never been there.
Mm-hmm. Shamika, you had an advantage because you come from a blues family. Her father was a great guitar player and singer by the name of Johnny Copeland. So you grew up in a true blues family.
Yeah, absolutely. I consider myself really blessed because I grew up in Harlem in the middle of the hip hop era when he had like all like Kumo D and all those guys hanging out, Big Daddy Kane and all those guys. And if it wasn't for my father, I wouldn't know anything about blues. Mm-hmm. So I'm really grateful that I grew up with that and mm-hmm. had so many great blues musicians around me my whole life. So I got a real opportunity to see some great stuff from my father and other great guys like Gate Mouth Brown, who he was great friends with, and Albert Collins and people like that. So yeah, I'm really, really blessed.
You're lucky. Trombone Shorty, you come from traditionally what's known as a jazz town, great city, Crescent City, New Orleans. Yet there's a blues undertone to what you've learned, and there's a blues undertone to a lot of things that go on in New Orleans, right?
Yes, I was introduced to the blues. My grandfather was Jesse Hill. He was a singer, songwriter. He did a lot of work with Dr. John. So as a kid, I was around those guys, and he did some work with Fats Domino and all those guys. My grandfather's brother was a acoustic guitar and blues guy. He played in Fats Domino band. His name was Papoose. And my mom was a big fan of Ray Charles, so I would listen to that music all day, every day in the house, and I would learn some things from that. Also getting some lessons or just watching my grandfather, who passed down a lot of things to my brother. And just being in the city of New Orleans, I just had a chance to be able to experience the blues music through the great Walter Wolfman Washington and Marvin Wright, and just play along with these people and learn some things through experience and doing it live.
Yeah. Kevin, one last question for each of you, very quickly. You've taken the blues, though, and you've used that to do other things. Your music has matured where it's not just straight blues anymore, but yet it still has that blues undertone.
Yes, I always wanted to tell the truth with music, and I think that became very important. So as my truth broadened by introducing blues and going back and investigating gospel and blues and all that stuff, it was, I incorporated everything. So basically, my songwriting and my communication, so all the things that I had been doing before came in. And so I'm not I don't consider myself a true blues guy, but I have deep respect for that genre. Yeah. And when I play it, I feel like I'm really a part of the blues community. Yeah. I mean, I am. But, it's hard to put into words.
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah.
It's really
well, you can put it into music in a little while, hopefully. Yeah. There's been a lot of great blues female singers. Bessie Smith, I mentioned. Who's maybe your most important influence as a vocalist?
I would probably have to say Ruth Brown and Coco Taylor for different reasons. But I really love those ladies. Mm. For their art form, because they were just amazing singers, but they were also really great ladies as well.
Yeah.
So I have, so many influences. I need 3 days to talk about them.
Yeah. And Trombone Shorty, you play a very non-traditional kind of blues instrument, the trombone, right?
Yep.
Interesting.
Well, just being from the city of New Orleans, Louis Armstrong is a brass city, and we have a bunch of brass bands around town.
Yeah.
I grew up playing around those things, and just being a horn player, I've been able to take a journey through music by backing up different musicians and studying and playing with different styles of music, and just taking that over time, soaking everything in from whatever genre I was put in for a while. I would take that and put it to what I'm doing today with my band, which is where we have rock and roll, hip hop, funk, blues, everything, and just put it in one pot, like a gumbo.
Let me open it up to the students here, and I'm going to let them ask some questions now. Who would like to ask the first question? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Kayla Lovelace. I'm from East St. Louis, Illinois, and my question to Ms. Copeland is, what impact has music had on shaping you into the person that you are today?
I have to say pretty much everything, because I grew up in this business, so I learned pretty much everything. Like, I grew up in it, and my music has reflected that. So all my albums from 18 to now, and now I'm almost 33, but they have kind of grew with it. So I'm just truly grateful. I've been able to travel all over this free world and meet amazing, wonderful people such as yourselves. You don't know how happy I am to see a bunch of young people interested in this music, because that means we have a future here, because you guys will come see us when we're all old.
That's right.
When we're all old, but it definitely has been a huge part of my life. I'm so happy that I followed my dream and became a singer, because I've gotten to do some pretty cool things, and it's pretty cool. So I'm so excited.
Someone else. Yes.
I'm Maria Artavia from Nashville, Tennessee, and my question is, If there was one thing that you wish you would have known about the music industry before you entered it, what was it?
Me?
Oh, all of you.
All of us.
One, take a shot, Trauma.
Well, I'm just 26, so I'm still learning some things. You know, I'm sitting up here talking with these legendary musicians, just sitting there talking with them and just learning from their experience. I'm able to gather a lot of information until I reach that point. But other than that, I'm just sitting back and taking a ride. You know, I don't know what to expect, but just let the music take me there.
And you never stop learning either.
Never,
you
stop,
never stop learning. You got
never.
If something I wish I had known going in, first of all, I'm glad there's some things I didn't know going in because I probably wouldn't have went in. But the one thing I wish I would have known is how important education was, you know, in terms of educating myself musically and having a lot of different tools in my toolbox to choose from musically in order to shape myself. I don't look at as education as the only, I mean, you're gonna get your education one way or another. I got mine on the streets, you know, but you're gonna get it, so your choice. So I wish I had known, like I said, I would tell people, if I had known I would have been famous, I would have practiced more.
Someone over here? Question, anybody? In the back, yes ma'am, yeah.
Hey y'all. I'm Brittany Edwards, and I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. And my question is, what advice would you give to us wanting to pursue a music career?
Well, I would say you have to really love this music. I think so many people get into the business wanting to be a pop star, rock star. It doesn't really work that way. You know, it takes really... it takes a hard work and a lot of time to get to the point where you can actually buy yourself a sandwich from Subway. You know what I mean? It takes a while. So you need patience. You got to be patient. And I tell myself that every single day. Patience, patience, patience.
Someone on this side. Yes.
Hi, my name is Lillian Garcia. I'm from Bainbridge Island, Washington State. Ms. Copeland, I want to congratulate you on your, I believe, Queen of Blues that you won last year.
Thank you very much.
So congratulations. But to especially Trombone Shorty and probably Kev Moe, I'm a music educator. And I teach, of course, 12-bar blues to my jazz kids. You know, I can teach mixolydians and all my modes and blues scales. What else can I help them to make them understand? What, you know, we did a workshop on lyrics and blues, but when I do it musically, what can I do with instrumentalists to make them understand it or help them understand it better?
Well, I think you learn everything you can learn. I went to the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts in New Orleans, and they taught me everything from classical music to jazz to funk. And the most important thing is that you want to keep your mind open to learning everything, because you never know who's going to call you. You know, as soon as I graduated high school, I got a call to join Lenny Kravitz's band. But because I was educating myself and learning different things, I was able to approach that music authentically because I knew a little something about it. But you should learn everything. You know, just because you're an instrumentalist, you should learn how to sing. Even if you're not that good, you should learn everything about different things, because it's going to help you as a person grow as a musician. And the most important thing, what we want to do is be the best musicians we can be, because one day you might have to teach some students that may play a harp, but you might not physically know how to play it, but you can explain through music theory what they need to do and give them the foundation. So the most important thing is just listen to all styles of music, learn as much as you possibly can, so whenever you get in any genre of music, you won't be sitting there looking scared, you know. And just learn as much as you can, and find someone that you really like and instill a bunch of things like I do.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Arissa Durrell. I attend Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles, California. I just wanted to know, what direction do you all see music going in today's generation, and what role do you think the blues will play in that?
Good question. Where are we today with music, and where's the blues going to be in that part?
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't pay attention to trends. A trend comes from the heart and soul of each and every one of you in here. And collectively, you will create that trend. Mm-hmm. Things that come before you, yes, you'll be influenced by them. But as far as where things are going, it's up to you to dig into yourself and go where you want to go. And that's where things will go.
Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes things get so far out of control, and I don't have to tell you guys know what's out of control and what's not. And I think eventually it comes back around to the basics, to the simple style of music, and then eventually you start all over. And it always comes right back to what we're doing, keeping it simple, because when it gets too, nuts, it eventually comes back to the simplicity of the music, which is where, where it belongs, I think.
Mm-hmm. True.
Someone from this side. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Winona Handy. I'm from Philadelphia, PA. And my question for you all is, where do you pull your inspiration when you're writing your songs?
It can be anything. Just sitting here today talking with you guys is inspiring me to do something. Writing some music. It happens in different type of things. In New Orleans, we do a lot of second lining, which is parading up the street. You got thousands of people dancing. People are banging on trash cans, all type of stuff. And just seeing the people dance may be an inspiration for me. But it comes from whatever you're going through at that time. Like if you're on a train or a plane and you're there for hours, you might get a bunch of ideas that you might want to do. But you might leave here today and talk about this experience and write some lyrics about that or being a part of this whole thing. So it comes from all over.
Ditto.
just work on, listen to great writers and listen to their craft and how they craft things and be a very diligent craftsman and tell the truth.
Last question from someone over here in the back.
My name is Skylar O'Neill. I'm with Long Beach Community Action Partnership, Man Making a Change program. And we promote peace and health in our community. And we was just wondering, Trombone Shorty, from being from New Orleans, Long Beach and New Orleans can be known for, violence. So we was wondering, how can we use music to promote peace and health in our community?
Nice.
Yeah. It is New Orleans and Long Beach, like you said, violence. But in New Orleans, music has been a savior for a bunch of people. So we just need to speak positively and let the children know our future that, you can do some cool things and through music and teach them everything, because we have a bunch of kids that's coming up now. They might not be into the trombone or the guitar, but they might be into hip hop production or anything. And just help them with whatever they're trying to do, So as long as we put out good music and positivity, I think we'll be okay and show the children that whatever it is, it can be cool, Everybody don't have to be a rapper, everybody don't have to be a trombonist, some people can be some songwriters. As long as we have great role models and people to try to help from you, we'll be okay. In New Orleans, I go around to all the high schools whenever I'm off tour because it is bad with violence and stuff. I go down there to give them some inspiration and see that you can do something because I play the trombone. There's a lot of brass musicians there, but after college and after playing in a marching band, they don't think that you can do something cool. So, I'm playing here tonight at the White House with some of these legendary musicians, and you can just take things further. So just promoting the peace and love, first of all, throughout the whole world is the most important thing, and just guiding the youth into something good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.